Pretend by Lexi Axelson has taken the romance world by storm, with readers and celebrities alike drawn to its raw exploration of damaged souls finding connection. This dark military romance, featuring a scarred Navy SEAL and an intelligence officer, has climbed bestseller lists through word of mouth, praised for its unflinching portrayal of trauma and desire. What makes this book particularly compelling is how it challenges conventional romance tropes by embracing the dangerous, obsessive aspects of love, while examining the masks we wear to protect our vulnerabilities. In a literary landscape increasingly hungry for complex characters with traumatic pasts, Pretend delivers an experience that feels both taboo and cathartic. Dagon Hannibal is not your typical romance hero. A legendary Navy SEAL sniper known as Operator Creature, he wears a skull mask to hide facial scars from torture he endured as a prisoner of war. His nights are plagued by nightmares of the surgeon slicing his face while he laughs through the pain, taunting his captors. "I have no breaking point," he tells them, spitting blood in their faces. At 34, Dagon has become addicted to war's adrenaline rush, bourbon, cigarettes, painkillers, and meaningless sex. His military career is an obsession that fills the void left by his mother's suicide when he was 5 years old. On Valentine's Day, young Dagon found Margaret Hannibal after she succumbed to untreated postpartum depression, a trauma that left him understanding pain in ways most cannot comprehend. As a sniper, Dagon eliminates high-value targets with deadly precision, feeling nothing as he watches through his scope. During an Overwatch mission, his sixth sense alerts him to danger moments before a Marine is shot. With focused calm, he locates and eliminates the enemy sniper, saving countless lives. His exceptional skills earn him a special assignment from Admiral Ravenmore, protecting his stepdaughter Alessia, who works in intelligence and has mysteriously ended up on someone's kill list. What no one realizes is that beneath Dagon's professional exterior lies a man already dangerously obsessed with Alessia. He's been watching her for weeks through his rifle scope, breaking into her apartment while her boyfriend is away, standing over her sleeping form, even cutting a lock of her hair to keep. "I'm stalking her not just because she's my assignment or because she's beautiful," he admits to himself. "Maybe it's the only way I know how to lust." Alessia Sahara Valentine is a dedicated intelligence officer whose life begins unraveling when she discovers a masked figure standing in her doorway during a storm. Soon after, a bullet grazes her boyfriend Jack's shoulder while they're in bed. These incidents mark the beginning of a terrifying stalking campaign. Black daisies with one yellow center flower appear on her windshield, followed by disturbing text messages from an unknown number. Just a ghost on the wall. Despite these threats, Alessia's personal life is equally troubling. Her relationship with Jack is deteriorating, and she feels disconnected from her stepfather, Admiral Ravenmore, who keeps their relationship strictly professional. When she's trapped in an elevator with the mysterious masked SEAL assigned as her security detail, she's unnerved by his intense gaze and knowing smile, as he calls her Valentine after seeing her name tag. On her birthday, which no one remembers except Dagon, she discovers Jack cheating with her best friend Bailey. Devastated and stranded during a storm with a dead phone, she calls Dagon for help. This vulnerability marks the beginning of their complicated entanglement as he takes her to his home for safety. What makes Alessia compelling is her determination to maintain control of her life despite the chaos surrounding her. She resists the security detail, insisting she can handle herself, yet finds herself drawn to the dangerous allure of the masked operator who seems to see through her carefully constructed defenses. When he tells her, "The day a girl named Alessia Sahara Valentine entered this world isn't just any other day," she begins to question whether the connection between them might be something more than professional. Pretend explores the power of fantasy and the masks we wear to protect ourselves from vulnerability. The word becomes a code between Alessia and Dagan, a way to step outside the boundaries of their professional relationship and explore their desires without consequences. After discovering her boyfriend's betrayal, Alessia asks Dagan if they can pretend Ravenmoor isn't his boss and he's not her bodyguard. She needs someone to hold her, to comfort her. This simple request evolves into something far more complex as they continue their game of pretending throughout their relationship. When Dagan removes his mask, revealing his scarred face to Alessia, she calls him beautiful, seeing beyond his physical trauma to the man beneath. This acceptance creates a profound bond between them, as Dagan has hidden his face since his capture, unable to bear the rejection he experienced from his ex-wife Stella, who couldn't accept his scars. Their relationship becomes defined by moments of pretending they aren't breaking rules, pretending their connection is purely physical, pretending they aren't falling in love. As Dagan tells Alessia on a rooftop under the stars, "When I see an airplane, I pretend it's a shooting star and make a wish." This childlike vulnerability from a hardened warrior reveals how pretending sometimes allows us to access truths we cannot otherwise face. The irony is that their pretending becomes more authentic than the faces they show the world. In their moments of raw intimacy, they reveal their true selves, damaged, yearning, and desperately seeking connection. As Dagan eventually confesses, "I'm a goddamn liar. I promised I wouldn't fall in love with you." The relationship between Dagan and Alessia exists on the knife's edge between pleasure and pain, consent and obsession. Their encounters are marked by intense physicality, his knife trailing across her skin, his dog tags wrapped around her throat, blood mixing with pleasure. Every touch between them carries weight, loaded with meaning beyond mere physical sensation. The air crackles with tension whenever they're in proximity, their chemistry a dangerous current threatening to overwhelm them both. During their first intimate encounter, Dagan cuts Alessia slightly with his knife, drawing blood. Rather than being frightened, she licks her own blood off his blade, embracing the darkness within him. This moment establishes their dynamic, two damaged souls finding healing through controlled pain and surrender. The act becomes a ritual between them, a testament to absolute trust. Each mark he leaves on her skin becomes a badge of honor, a physical manifestation of their connection that goes deeper than conventional romance. Dagan's approach to intimacy reflects his complex trauma. Having endured torture that would break most men, he has learned to transform pain into power. His experiences in captivity taught him that control over pain is sometimes the only freedom available. When he tells Alessia, "It's only fun if someone does get hurt," he's revealing his understanding of how closely pleasure and pain are intertwined. His pierced body, scarred face, and dominant sexual preferences all stem from his need to control the pain that has defined his life. Each piercing represents a moment of chosen pain, each scar a battle survived. For Alessia, submitting to Dagan's dominance becomes an unexpected path to liberation. With her ex-boyfriend Jack, sex was mechanical, unfulfilling, and sometimes unwanted, a duty rather than a desire. With Dagan, she discovers parts of herself she never knew existed, a capacity for pleasure through surrender, a desire to be claimed and marked. When he promises to ruin her for anyone else, she embraces this possession, finding freedom in belonging completely to someone else. Their dynamic allows her to shed the careful control she's maintained throughout her life, trading it for a deeper form of power found in willing submission. Their physical relationship serves as a metaphor for their emotional journey, learning to trust through vulnerability, finding healing through surrender, and discovering that sometimes the deepest connections form when we allow someone to see our darkest desires. Each scene between them pushes boundaries, not just of physical limits, but of emotional ones. The pain they share becomes a language of its own, speaking truths their words cannot express. Through their intense physical connection, both find what they've been seeking, For Dagon, someone strong enough to handle his darkness. And for Alessia, someone who sees her completely and wants her anyway. Trauma shapes both protagonists in profound and haunting ways, creating a complex tapestry of psychological wounds that influence their every interaction. Dagon's nightmares about his torture are so severe, he maintains a fortress of light in his living space, every room illuminated to ward off the darkness that triggers memories of his captivity. The harsh fluorescent bulbs serve as both protection and reminder of his vulnerability. His mother's suicide, discovered by teenage Dagon on Valentine's Day, left him with such a visceral hatred for the holiday that he actively avoided relationships for years until he encounters Alessia Valentine, whose name becomes an ironic symbol of potential healing and redemption. During a seemingly routine military intelligence briefing, Alessia unknowingly opens Pandora's box when she reveals graphic details about the surgeon's victims. Her clinical description of surgical precision and methodical torture triggers a cascade of memories for Dagon, who recognizes his own experiences in her words. His trauma manifests in numerous physical tells. The constant spinning of a bullet between his fingers when anxiety strikes, chain smoking that intensifies during stress, and episodes of dissociation during intimate moments where he becomes someone else entirely, his eyes going cold and distant as if viewing the world through a sniper scope. Alessia's own ghosts follow her like shadows, manifesting in hypervigilance and trust issues. The betrayal by her college boyfriend and best friend, caught in an intimate embrace at her birthday party, left deep emotional scars. Her subsequent stalking experience transformed her home from a sanctuary into a source of constant tension, where every creak and shadow holds potential threat. The complicated relationship with her stepfather, marked by his subtle undermining and impossible standards, created a persistent feeling of inadequacy that affects her professional confidence and personal relationships. When she discovers Dagon's hidden room, plastered with surveillance photographs of her daily routine, her world tilts on its axis as she confronts the horrifying possibility that her protector might be the very predator she's been running from. The novel masterfully explores how trauma creates invisible barriers between people while simultaneously offering the possibility of deep connection through shared understanding of pain. This duality becomes evident in intimate moments between the protagonists. When Dagon violently awakens from a nightmare, gripping Alessia's wrist with military-trained strength, his confusion about reality is palpable. Instead of recoiling, she instinctively knows how to ground him, her own experiences with fear allowing her to navigate his darkness. Rather than verbalize his trauma, Dagon pulls her back into bed, raw honesty in his voice as he confesses, "I don't want to talk. I want to fuck until I can't think anymore. Let me drown in you." This visceral expression of using physical connection to escape psychological pain resonates deeply with readers who understand how intimacy can serve as temporary shelter from the ghosts that haunt us. Their relationship demonstrates how shared trauma can either deepen bonds or shatter them completely, sometimes doing both simultaneously in a complex dance of trust and fear, healing and hurt. The consequences of Dagon and Alessia's forbidden relationship ripple throughout the novel with devastating force, affecting not only their lives, but those of everyone around them. As her assigned security detail, Dagon risks his distinguished military career and the trust of his elite team by pursuing her. Admiral Ravenmore's initial warning was unequivocal. He explicitly stated that Alessia was strictly off-limits, threatening not just careers, but entire military futures if anyone dared to cross that carefully drawn line. Their attempt to keep the relationship hidden crumbles when Gera, a fellow officer with a long-standing grudge against Dagon, discovers them sharing an intimate moment in the hospital's east wing. The fallout is swift and severe. Alessia is immediately recalled to the United States, her promising career in military intelligence tainted by accusations of misconduct. The shame cuts especially deep because of her family legacy. her stepfather's distinguished service record, and her mother's decorated military career make her perceived transgression feel like a betrayal of their sacrifices. Meanwhile, Dagon faces Admiral Ravenmoor's legendary temper in a closed-door meeting that leaves his future hanging by a thread. The situation becomes exponentially more complex with the revelation of Dagon's marriage to Stella. Though they've been separated for 18 months, after Stella's infidelity and her inability to accept Dagon's battle-scarred appearance, the technical existence of their marriage transforms Alessia and Dagon's relationship from merely forbidden to potentially scandalous. The discovery shatters Alessia's self-image as an honorable officer. Her heartbreaking letter to Dagon reveals her torment. "I've become everything I swore I'd never be. I can't say goodbye in person because one look at you would undo all my resolve. You're like gravity. I can't help but fall into you." Their forced separation exposes the raw depth of their emotional dependence. Dagon spirals into a dark period reminiscent of his post-injury depression, spending his weekends haunting El Divine, the bar where they first connected, and drinking himself into oblivion. His vulnerability shows most clearly in a late-night confession to his stepbrother Graves. "Alessia left me, just like my mother did. Everyone I love disappears." This parallel between his childhood abandonment and Alessia's departure reveals the profound psychological wounds their separation has reopened. The novel masterfully explores whether passionate love can justify the sacrifice of everything else, career aspirations, professional reputation, family relationships, and personal integrity. For Dagon and Alessia, the question becomes more complex as their relationship proves to be not just about desire, but about healing. Their connection helps Dagon overcome his trauma from both his mother's abandonment and his combat injuries, while Alessia finds in him the strength to confront her own fears of inadequacy. As Dagon eventually tells her in their climactic reunion, "I can't live without you. You are the color in my black and white world. You are the single rose in a field full of them, the only one I see, the only one I'll ever want to see." The mask Dagon wears becomes a powerful metaphor throughout the novel. When Alessia asks why he wears it, he responds cryptically that we all have scars we hide beneath masks. His physical mask conceals the torture scars on his face, but it also represents the emotional barriers he's built to protect himself from further pain. After his wife Stella rejected his scarred face, calling him a monster, Dagon learned to hide not just his physical appearance, but his emotional vulnerability. He declares he doesn't believe in love, yet his actions toward Alessia reveal a capacity for devotion that contradicts his cynical worldview. Alessia wears her own masks, the professional facade she presents to her stepfather, the perfect girlfriend role she played with Jack despite his mistreatment, the strong woman who insists she doesn't need protection. When she allows Dagon to see her vulnerability, to comfort her after Jack's betrayal, she begins removing these masks one by one. The novel suggests that true intimacy requires removing our masks and revealing our scars, both physical and emotional. When Alessia removes Dagon's mask, revealing his scarred face, and calls him beautiful, she offers acceptance that begins healing his deepest wounds. Similarly, when Dagon tells Alessia, "You don't need fixing, you need to embrace your broken pieces, which make you divine and powerful," he's encouraging her to stop hiding her imperfections behind masks of perfection. Their relationship becomes transformative precisely because they allow each other to see what they hide from the world. As Dagon reflects, Alessia feels like a new beginning, a fresh start after a horrible journey I thought would never end. The novel challenges readers to consider the line between obsession and love. Dagon's initial stalking of Alessia, watching her through his rifle scope, breaking into her apartment, cutting a lock of her hair, is disturbing behavior that would typically characterize a villain rather than a romantic hero. Yet the novel complicates this dynamic by revealing Dagon's perspective. His obsession stems from a lifetime of trauma and an inability to connect normally with others. When he confesses, "I can't stop myself," and "maybe it's the only way I know how to lust," we glimpse a man whose emotional development has been stunted by trauma. As their relationship develops, Dagan's obsession evolves into something deeper. He begins to care about Alessia's happiness and well-being, not just his possession of her. When he tells her, "I've broken our promise, I promised I wouldn't fall in love with you," he's acknowledging the transformation of his feelings from obsession to love. The novel doesn't excuse Dagan's stalking behavior, but presents it as part of his damaged psyche, something he must recognize and overcome to build a healthy relationship. When Alessia discovers his secret room filled with photographs of her, she confronts him with a gun. His response, "I'm not normal, I want you dangerously," acknowledges his unhealthy fixation while also revealing his self-awareness. Their relationship ultimately becomes healing for both of them. Dagan learns to express vulnerability and trust, while Alessia discovers her own strength and desires. Their final reunion on the beach, where Dagan tells her, "The only time I want to do good guy things is when I'm with you," suggests that love has the power to transform even the darkest obsession into something redemptive. The novel concludes with heart-wrenching uncertainty as Dagan prepares for what might be his most dangerous mission yet, the capture of the surgeon, the sadistic figure whose torture left both physical and psychological scars that still haunt him. The morning of his departure carries a bittersweet weight, filled with moments that feel both ordinary and precious. He calls Alessia Mrs. Hannibal, though they haven't exchanged vows, and makes a lighthearted comment about her being pregnant, words that hang in the air with hope and possibility, even as danger looms. The goodbye scene at the airfield unfolds with devastating simplicity. Alessia watches as Dagan's team, his brothers in arms, board the plane one by one. There's Grim, the steady rock of the team, whose quiet strength has saved them countless times. Rooker, whose dark humor masks a fierce loyalty. Lopez, the tactical genius who's gotten them out of impossible situations. And Kane, whose infectious smile belies his lethal efficiency in the field. Each man carries the weight of previous missions, of bonds forged in combat as they ascend the aircraft steps. The mission's catastrophic unraveling is revealed through brutal, moment-by-moment detail. The team walks into a carefully orchestrated trap, their tactical advantage evaporating in seconds. The fall of Dagan's brothers happens with devastating speed. Kane takes two rounds to the chest while shielding Grim, his final words lost in the chaos of gunfire. His death scene, cradled by his teammates as life slips away, becomes a haunting reminder of war's merciless nature. The team continues fighting even as hope diminishes, each man knowing but not accepting that this mission might be their last. This cliffhanger ending serves as more than mere dramatic tension. It illuminates the harsh reality faced by military families every day. Through Alessia's perspective at the airfield, we experience the unique anguish of loving someone in service, the way ordinary phrases like "see you soon" become loaded with uncertainty, how every goodbye could be final, how love itself becomes an act of courage. The battlefield evolves into a powerful metaphor that extends beyond physical combat. Just as Dagan faces tangible enemies, he and Alessia wage their own wars, against trauma, against doubt, against a world that doesn't always understand their choices. Their love story plays out across multiple battlefields, the literal ones where Dagan fights, and the emotional terrain where both must navigate their fears, hopes, and the price of commitment to someone whose duty repeatedly calls them into danger. The novel's conclusion leaves readers suspended in a moment of profound uncertainty. Will Dagan survive to return to Alessia? Can their love withstand this final terrible test? These questions echo the reality of countless military relationships, where tomorrow isn't guaranteed and love must be strong enough to endure both presence and absence. The story reminds us that in both love and war, courage isn't about the absence of fear, it's about continuing despite it.